Blog Talk Radio.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from your guitar, blowing on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks in the quiet street.
It up, Blog Talk Radio. I am Brenda Moss, aka Lady Diva. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. That song track there is called Corcovado, and the singer is Joy Mover. That is my guest for this evening. Joy Mover, are you with me this evening?
I am with you.
I am crazy about that song. That guitar sound, your voice is like a bird, and the combination with that. And that guitar, it's like he didn't put his foot in it. It's, yeah, he's making love to the guitar, and that's the kind of music that will calm you down, set the mood and everything. I love it.
That's the idea. That is the goal.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Joy.
Well, that's a wide open question there, Brenda. About myself, you know, I have just a love. We were talking about love, and music to me comes from that place in my heart, and it is a very sacred place. Because the heart is a very sacred place. It gets hurt very easily. And it also feels, you know, that's where feeling comes from. And it also comes, music comes, you know, from listening. And in listening, we hear, you know, music comes to us through our ears. And when we've absorbed music and we can inculcate music, we can become music if we have music. If we, you know, I guess it's a, for those people who are musical, it is something that is a drive. And it is something that I know that I've been experiencing from the time I can remember. So it is a very deeply ingrained, heartfelt. For example, my mother was a singer. My mother was a vocalist, I would call it that, because there is a voice. The voice is a sacred thing. Words can be sacred things, should be. Love is a sacred thing. It's all, you know, in the whole orbit of love, where music comes from, it is almost like it's on a particular channel, that it comes from somewhere in the universe, that if we key into that, that we have to be an open channel to receive it. And our minds have to be open, our hearts have to be open, and we have to love, and we have to care, and we have to listen for the sounds and for those sounds that resonate in, you know, with us. Now, the instrument that one plays, like as a vocalist, I am the instrument. I am a wind instrument. So
yeah.
I take breaths, and I, you know, my instrument is my actual physical self that actually becomes, with breath, you know, music.
Yeah.
So it is magic. You know, it's all magic in its way. It's, I think.
Yes. Now, you are a tool to be reckoned with, a musical tool to be reckoned with. It's in your DNA. Your father, your grandfather, it goes all the way down. And your father, Jimmy, like his father before him, is a trumpeter. And you mentioned that he played with several big bands of greats in his era. Can you name a couple of them?
Well, one in particular was Tommy Dorsey. I think everybody knows of Tommy Dorsey. Tommy Dorsey's band was hot. But that wasn't... Dad played with Charlie Spivak, and he played with Ina Ray Hutton, who I believe was one of the first female... I think she was a drummer. And there were many... He played with Billy Eckstine. He played for a radio show called Lights Out. He played an instrument called the theremin as well, which was really the first electronic instrument. And he played it on the wavelength, on the airwaves. He played it with his hand, with an antenna. The instrument was made by Moog, Mr. Moog, who created the synthesizer. And my father was one of the few people in the world who had mastered this instrument.
Wow.
And believe me, I have tried it. And my dad passed away. Actually, he passed away at the beginning of 2013. So I have his theremin. I cannot play it, but he played it, and it was like it sounded like a female voice in the highest registers. You know, it was like
okay.
Star Trek. You know, like that kind of
right.
that kind of sound.
Right.
And. So, but my father was also a local in Boston. He played with Chick Corea's father in a
okay.
band, you know,
wow.
and he came to music from being a child and being hearing, I believe, oh my God, he told me this story so many times, and he had heard a trumpeter play, and that was it. It was like, that was it. That was it. And he wanted to be a trumpet player. After he was taking trumpet lessons, and his teacher took him to hear this person who I will think of, please God. And anyway, he was so affected by it that's all he ever wanted to do after that. And his brother, my Uncle Lester was his younger brother. He played trombone. And so my dad and he, like, played amazing Dixieland together. It was, like, amazing music. And they were wonderful together. But my dad also had a band for many years prior to going to New York that played all around Boston. And Charlie Spivak, he had gone to the New England Conservatory for a while, and he was recruited, I believe, by he went to New York and had like $20, you know, not even that, whatever he had in his pocket. It was one of those stories, you know, he was going there to an audition for a big band, like Charlie Spivak, I believe it was that. And, you know, and he got the gig, you know. My dad was an amazing technical technician. He was a great sight reader. The Tommy Dorsey story was that he was able to come into Tommy Dorsey's band not having even seen the charts and get through these charts, which in and of itself, you know, was kind of like a miracle, I guess, you know, to be that kind of a amazing reader, which was one of his amazing skills. And he could have been like, he was like a Doc Severinsen as well, like, you know, a high note player, you know, lead player,
yeah.
Very high-end, very passionate player, and
yeah.
His music was incredibly emotional.
Wow. So how long have you been working in the music industry as far as writing lyrics, writing your music, your, you know, doing the thing and owning up to yourself as a musician, singer, songwriter? So how many years altogether have you been doing this?
Well, I was writing, I was making up songs. If you want to count skipping, you know, going to school when I was a little girl and, you know, writing songs.
Yeah, yes, maybe. Yeah.
But not really. If we want to start with the first really written song, I actually had the incredible opportunity to be mentored along with my older brother, Bob, and my younger brother, Richard, who he was by Ira Sullivan in Miami, and Ira brought us into incredible exposure of amazing musicians in Miami when we moved from Boston. And the first thing I remember was when I was 16, Ira played at a place called The Flick, where people like Joni Mitchell at the time were playing and people like Dion, you know, like I saw people like that there. But Ira was playing at The Flick, and for my 16th birthday, it was close to the University of Miami, and he was at the music school teaching and playing and all of that. And he was a Miami legend. He had come from Chicago, and I had written a song. I had written the lyrics. Okay, this goes back again. When we were kids, Bob and me and Richard, my younger brother, we used to listen to Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross. And we would do all the parts. And Sing a Song of Basie was a major influence in our singing, you know, understanding the lyrics of John Hendrix. And the harmonies of these songs were incredibly complex. But we just took to it like, you know, like fish in water. And we were singing these parts. And so John Hendrix was my first real, you know, influence as far as writing jazz lyrics, because I wrote lyrics to Stablemates. I wrote lyrics to it, and I went to at my birthday party. They were performed, you know, for the first time, and then I had written lyrics to another tune, like a solo by Charlie Parker, and that was performed, and that continued to be performed in Miami by a musician and singer by the name of Joe Donato down there was continuing to sing those lyrics. And that was my, so John Hendrix really was, you know, the Sing a Song of Basie stuff was really a major influence. And so was, you know, at the same time, I was still influenced by Carole King and Joni Mitchell and James Taylor and, you know, all of those people, you know, as well. But the jazz piece was really my earliest influence because my parents were so majorly ingrained there. You know, that's where their influences were.
Okay. Now,
my father was actually to the point where he didn't want us to listen to anything, you know, but jazz. My mother was far more open about what we listened to.
Okay. Now, your jazz roots run deep, and you have strong reflection and respect and appreciation for great musicianship, regardless of the music genre. But your jazz roots runs deep, and there's also a thread of Latin folk and soul and blues woven into the mix and creating the tapestry that may be considered outside the norm in traditional jazz were in the traditional jazz world. Now, you can do almost anything in the mix with jazz, and I like that about you. So I want to go ahead and start playing some music that you have written. Like the song I want to spin now, If I Could Tell You. Can you give me a little story background about the title of this song, please?
It's about, if I could tell you, it's about all those things you don't say to someone that you love, that you would, you know, that come into your head, and but you can't say them for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And this is really what the song is about.
All right. And this is Let's Jazz It Up, everyone. If you want to call and speak to Joy Mover, call the call-in line number at 657-383-0771. We'll be right back. And this song is called If I Could Tell You.
Exactly what I mean.
is If I Can Tell You by Joy Mover. Wow, I like that guitar, and it makes your shoulders move, Joy. It just puts you in a real good mood, and your voice is so smooth. Tell us a little bit about your band. Your brother, is he playing in the some of these songs?
Yes, he is. Let's see. We played Corcovado on that one. Actually, Ira was playing. Ira Sullivan was playing alto flute in there.
Right.
And talk about guitar. The guitar work is John Paul. John Paul was also the producer and arranger of many of these songs on the first album. And Mike Levine was on piano, and we had Lee Levin on drums, and we had Richard Bravo on percussion, and John Paul, you know, there are no words in a way, like his beauty, the beauty of his guitar and the beauty of his, it's just right. It's just like right there. I mean, he's right there. He doesn't have to stretch for it. It's like right there. It's right there inside of him. He is so beautiful. I waited for about 2 years to be able to work with him.
Wow.
And, yeah, he was booked up like crazy. And, you know, I sent him a tape on a cassette tape with just me and my piano and singing these songs, like, you know, that was it, right? And I didn't hear from him for a long time. And I knew why. I mean, you know, I knew I got a call back, you know, that he's sort of like, you know, review it and get back to me. But, you know, his list was long. And I knew that going in, but I had no idea. So, but when I finally got to work with him, and it was just, you know, a match. The chemistry of musicians is so, you know, I waited because, you know, you wait for the right people, you know, you wait for the people that can really make your music come to life the way you hear it in your head, you know, and that's, he and the other musicians, every one of them created their own parts. You know, I mean, Mike Levine did a lot of arranging as well, but these musicians were so amazing. The band in this album is like every one of them are all, they're stars, every single one of them. You know, if you look at the credits on each and every one of these musicians, they have in their own right credits, Grammys, Richard Bravo, the arranger, the producer, every one of them have like amazing, you know, backgrounds. And, you know, guitarist on Till There Was You is a PhD, you know, at the University of Miami. You know, these people are just so over the top, you know, that when I did play the record for people, for some people, you know, they didn't think it could possibly be like real, you know,
how did you
get all that, you know, going on? And it was like, well, you know, we did it one song at a time, and it took me a long time.
It took us a long time.
You know, because there is a perfectionism. Unfortunately, John Paul, you could get him on the show, and he could tell you about the ridiculous perfectionism that it's all about, you know.
He has a serious passion. Now, for our listeners out there, if anyone wants to check into about the band and you and your music, can you go ahead and give our listeners out there your website information and where they can purchase your music?
Absolutely. I think I'm pretty much everywhere, I'm kind of happy to say, and it's just kind of the way it needs to be these days. But it's, you know, it's joymover.com, HTTP, the whole thing, www.joymover.com is my website. And in fact, if they go there now, they'll see your promo for this show and a number of the songs underneath the promo for the so they'll see that, and they'll see on the webpage, it has about the band and all about, you know, their bios and pictures and all kinds of all of it. So it's there. It's joymover.com. But I'm also at Amazon. I'm also at CD Baby. I'm at Bandcamp. I'm on Apple. I'm on iTunes. I'm on Amazon. You know, so those are the ones. Basically, if you go Joy Mover, any of them, and there are basically three releases The first one was really a serious release in the sense that I had a formal release for it. I had press and I had radio from the College Music Journal. So there was some promotion of it at the time. But for the others, they're really not released. They're out there, but they have not been formally released. The second project was with Vinny Zumo out of New York, and he was formerly with, he's also a guitarist and a multi-instrumentalist, as John is as well. I mean, John plays a number of instruments on the album, on the first one, and then Vinny does the same thing on the Inside album. He's all over the map there, and I have Kenny Barron, who is just beyond belief, on my original Winter Song. So, I mean, his biography alone, you know, it takes up probably 10 pages. You know, it's, but when you deal with people that played with Bird, they played with Miles. Ira played with Miles. He played with Bird. He played with Lester Young. I mean, you know, he played with everybody. And it's like, you know, to have had the opportunity to have listened to these people. You know, what I said about listening is that, you know, that is the key to music, you know, is really absorbing it. And then it kind of like, and, you know, and keeping that channel open to, you know, those experiences musically that really capture you. And I have been captured so much by jazz throughout my life that, you know, it was hard for me in some respects to show that appreciation during my, you know, younger years, in that everybody was majorly into rock and everything. And, you know, I'd bring up Billie Holiday, or I'd bring up, you know, people that I loved, you know, Stan Getz even, and then, you know, Ira, or people that I knew personally. Jaco Pastorius was another prodigy of Ira Sullivan. You know, he has Pat Metheny was another one that Ira actually mentored at the University of Miami as well. As Phyllis Hyman, you know, she was a huge inspiration to me.
Yeah?
Huge, absolutely huge. In my later, you know, in my, I spent a little time at the University of Miami Music School, and I was a jazz vocal major. And I had the pleasure of the company of Carmen Lundy, Terry DeSerio, Phyllis Hyman, to name just the few that pop into the forefront. Amazing singers. And Phyllis, especially at the time, was playing with Monty Alexander, and I got to hear her, and she used to come and hear me. I was playing with Mike Gerber at the time.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
A wonderful pianist at the university as well, a blind pianist, amazing.
Wow, wow. Well, we're going to go on and plan some more music. I was interested in playing one of these other songs. This one is called Fever. Can you tell me a little bit about the title of this song, how it came about?
Well, this is a song, Peggy Lee, it's Peggy Lee. And basically, it's my take on it, on an old standard. Beyonce actually has a version of this song as well.
I did it
before her, believe it or not. I did. Mine came out in 2012. I think hers came out in, you know, later than that.
Yeah.
But this one, you know, it didn't, like I said, I didn't have the opportunity to really promote it in a huge way because I'm not with a record company. So that does kind of impede a bit of how you're able to market and promote your music. So this song actually was slated for a Sony compilation, but unfortunately it didn't happen, but it had been chosen. So this song, I wrote a couple of versions. I actually changed some words. I wrote a verse, because some of the older songs are so dated that it becomes like you can't really sing it with a straight face, for me. You know,
yeah,
they're just so dated.
Yeah,
you know, so
yeah.
I take my poetic just liberty. I don't know. I take my poetic liberties, let me put it that way. And I did that in this song as well. So you'll hear, for those people that are familiar with the song, it was famous, you know, made famous by Peggy Lee. And she, it really was hers. And I kind of just took it off from there. And Ira plays trumpet, muted trumpet, and you're going to hear some really good, cool jazz here.
Right. All right. This is Fever, everyone. Stay tuned. Be right back.
Yeah.
can feel it. When you kiss me, feel when you hold me tight.
It up, Blog Talk Radio. Get down, Joy. You got fever in your gal. I really like that one.
And those were the keys of Mike Levine. You know, another just, you know, the, just the beautiful, another beautiful heart, you know, coming out in the music. The man is an amazing arranger and writer. He also has a number of solo albums out himself. And he was in my first band, you know, when I was like 18. And we used to go out to the Keys, and in that band, Hiram Bullock was another member of that band. Michael Gerber was another member of that band. And anyways, so there were some great people that used to, you know, that were at the University of Miami during that period. But Mike has had a long and wonderful career. He's done a lot of work with the Latin bands down there, John Secada. Many of the musicians, the percussion and also Mike's son played drums on a couple of cuts. They did a lot of work with the with John Secada, and they played on the Latin television stations down there. So that was fun to reconnect with those people.
Yeah, yeah. So I would like to ask you, I know a lot of people are curious to know, are you doing any performances in your community, or are you doing any international performances overseas with your band or your group, any upcoming events?
Well, here's the thing. You know, that would be great. It's just that I had an injury, a back injury, and so I really don't have the ability right now. I'm in physical therapy and I'm trying to get better, but I'm mostly just developing, you know, my music from my piano bench and recording it, and you know, trying to distribute and promote it through the radio as basically the primary platform, because I really don't have the ability to be traveling and touring. My musicians these days are, you know, a click away. Music, you know, you send the music via the internet, and you record that way. You know, you send parts, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I was able to do – so, no, to answer your question, that was a long way. No, no performances. Occasionally, you know, I have been known to sit in occasionally with some people locally, you know, when I'm feeling up for it, and I can – but to do an entire performance, like a whole night, is – right now, not really in the picture.
Well, I have a question for a listener. When you do get better, will you be returning back into live performances?
That's absolutely a hope, because there's nothing better than, you know, being there with real people, you know, and sharing music with people and, you know, having that interaction. You know, it's a completely different aspect. You know, adapt to the circumstances, but for many, many years I was performing live. The problem with that is performing your own music live, there are very few venues. So when I did play, the last band I was with, when I made the decision, when I was able, and I was, you know, I was working, I had a regular job as well. I had a day job, but I would work on the weekends in music. And so that band, you know, was a cover band. So we'd do blues, we'd do everything. But, you know, I'd say, you know, can I do a couple of my tunes? And 9 times out of 10, the bar owners would say, we don't do original music. You know, like, it'd be like that. You know?
Oh,
so it was,
wow. Yeah.
Very hard. So I actually had to make a decision at one point where I could not do both, because I had more than a full-time job. It was a job that I had to travel around the country. So I had to be on planes and trains and automobiles and everywhere, and at all times of the day and night. And so music became like just a therapy for me to just, you know, like create, write on all my downtime when I was like, you know, not working. But it also was like the thing where, like, when I was working with the cover band, and then I realized when I joined this last band, I said, you know, this is conditional upon my being able to play my original music. Of course, you know, that caused a whole, you know, political issue within the band, because other people wrote music, right, in the band, and they were like, well, if she's going to play her original music, then we got to play our original music. And it's like, you know, like, then it becomes like, okay, we're going to have to, like, you know, you can see that, you know, it's going to be a problem here. So, you know, you just sing your Bonnie Raitt and your Susie Tedeschi and, you know, that kind of stuff, which I enjoy singing, don't get me wrong, and I enjoy singing in a jazz venue as well. I love singing standards. And I just heard, in fact, my brother Bob mentioned that Boz Scaggs' latest, the Standards album, he actually gave like major accolades to. I have not had the opportunity to listen to it yet. He mentioned a song to me. I think it's called "There's No You," maybe. But I could be wrong. But he said that this Boz Gags album, and I said, "You're kidding?" Because like I didn't hear about it yet. Maybe it's been done for me. Anyway, I was surprised by that. The point being is that, you know, here I knew him from Urban Cowboy, you know, singing, you know, a song that my sister made me take her to see that movie like 10 times. You know what I'm saying? But it was great to hear that he had such, he had evolved, and the way that my brother had said it was that there was like an evolution in it was a growth period in his singing that he actually, you know, and that this album is just an expression of that growth. And that's the thing, as a creator of music, and not just a singer of music, but as a creator of music, it's a completely different driver, you know. To be a writer, you know, you have to live, you know. It's like to sing, you have to listen. To write, you have to live. You have to be able to interpret life into lyric.
Yeah.
And that's its own kind of, you know, thing. And so there's many different, you know, many different, let me just say, layers of things, you know, of the singers, songwriters, many different avenues, paths that one can take depending on their circumstances.
Yeah. So I can tell that you're a person that good at writing music, and you're sensitive at seeing things in your life's journey, and you can write about it. So what I want to do is play another one of your songs, and this one is called Midnight Oil. I know it's got a little story behind it, so how did you come up with the title of this song?
Well, this one was, you know, burning the midnight oil. Like, you know, I thought about it. I used to live in Miami for many years, from the time I was in third grade until high school, and then afterwards. But, you know, the whole idea of, like, going down to Key West and, you know, and just living, it was just an incredibly fantastic experience. And the midnight oil was, like, you know, listening to music, dancing all night, you know, like, you know, with the ocean in the background, and it just sort of a paradise kind of feeling, you know. It was inspired by, you know, you don't want to go home. The thing about it really is like, you don't want to go home. It's about the end of a vacation, you know. It's like, do I have to, you know, can I be a trainer? Can I be one of your bartenders? I don't care. Like, don't make me go home. You know, it's kind of like that kind of song. It's about partying. It's like wanting to party all the time. And obviously it was written at an earlier stage of, you know, of life, when things were like, you know, you kind of felt like if you were partying all the time that life would be so much more enriched.
All right. This is Midnight Oil. Stay tuned, everybody.
Like the midnight oil and linen bird,
Well, all right. That was Midnight Oil by Joy Mover. Joy, can you go ahead and give our listeners out there your website information and where to purchase this music?
Absolutely. And let's see here. They can go to joymover.com. They can go to CD Baby. But the .com is http://www.joymover.com. And you go to the music section, or you can go to bandcamp.com and all the buy links. Or you can, if you go to the .com, right on the front page, you'll see some links, and it takes you right to where you can buy the music and listen to the music, etc. Like I said, I am on Bandcamp, I'm on iTunes, and I'm on Apple Music, CD Baby, Amazon. So just about anywhere you look. However, more personal information for me and the band is on my webpage, obviously. The .com has the most information about everyone and all the music.
Now, as you know, most people on social media sites, are you on any of those social media sites like Facebook,
Instagram? I am. Oh, yeah. So, you know, here we go. We go Twitter, you know, Joy Mover, Twitter and Joy Mover. On Facebook, I have a personal and a professional. The professional sometimes gets confused, you know, but it's the Joy Mover vocalist songwriter is my Facebook. It would be, you know, the same thing, Facebook, Joy Mover. YouTube, I also have a site on YouTube. So, yeah, just the I'm not on Instagram yet. I realize, too, like they're really – Facebook really isn't a – music venue so much as whether, like, for as far as people buying music or listening to music, but it's a great place to advertise, like, where you have a show going on or things like that. But I don't, you know, what the research that I've been looking at recently, I just been reading an ASCAP 2017 report that they just did, and it's probably on their website as well. And it speaks to the different social media and their contributions to the total picture of the music business. And, of course, it's something I've just started to take a look at. And it's lots of, you know, like numbers and percentages and who does what and, who, you know, why. And but the good news is it looks like that the piracy piece has been, you know, supplanted by, you know, the Spotify's and the other people that are paying, you know, the 0.000. You don't need pirates when you have corporations like these. Excuse me for saying this is in posterity. However, this is our scene, you know. Things have gone upside down, you know. It's very difficult for musicians to survive just doing music, you know. And the climate is not seemingly getting any better right now. Although I know there may be people that might be wanting to advocate, there are not, you know, major lobbies. Whatever the lobbies we do have, we don't have the kind of power that, you know, that obviously other, you know, professions might yield. Let's just put it that way, you know. So there's a lot of work to be done to improve what happens for musicians. And so the more everybody can do to really understand that, you know, musicians are really being squeezed out. You know, it's really hard.
For our young minds that wants to know, what was your first instrument when you were in school besides your singing voice?
Well, I took a few piano lessons, and I played flute. And my issue with piano is, even though I write on the piano, and some people might think, you know, that I play passively. You know, I can play my songs and I can play some things. But I don't have, you know, the facility. Like, you know, it's not my instrument. But that is the piano, the first instrument that I played. And it was also to make up music. Like, before you know how to read or really know any other songs when you're a little kid, all you know is what you make up. So that is one of the ways in which kids create. When they don't know anything, you know, they actually can create. So piano was the first, and then I had some formal lessons, but I had difficulty, to be honest. I had difficulty with my formal lessons and the discipline required, but I think I also had some difficulty reading both the bass line and the treble line at the same time. Now, I have no problem reading a chord change and doing a melody line, But when you're showing me the bass clef and all the intricate notes on the bass clef and my fingerings and so forth on the piano, I have problems with that for whatever reason. So I didn't master that. However, I write my music based on what I hear. I can play chords. I can play pretty much any chord. And I understand basically, you know, the basics of the harmonics that I'm working with. I would say that for everybody that is listening, that if there is a love for music, then to follow your heart with it, because that's, you know, the most important thing is that, you know, if you make music, you know, success is a matter of, I guess, opinion, you know, in a way, but, you know, making the best music that you can make is, you know, if you make the best music you have the ability to make, if you can do that, you're a success right there. You know, if so, I feel that you may not have in this environment a monetary reward, but you will have your music, you know, and you will hope that there will be, you know, some light at the end of the tunnel. But that is not the primary reason to go into music. It's to go into it because you love it, you want to explore, you're doing it therapeutically, you're doing it for your own evolution and your spiritual and your, you know, your soul travel in terms of, you know, how you get on that channel where the music is and where that resides is in a very beautiful place. And, you know, the more time you can spend in a beautiful place creating beautiful things, melodies and harmonics and chords and interacting with other people, making peaceful music, doing something constructive, that in and of itself is a reward, you know. And that's one of the things that is mandatory to understand, is that you are doing it for the love, for the passion of the music. That is the primary end. And some people don't even get discovered till after they're gone. You know, it doesn't mean that their music, you know, wasn't good while they were alive. It's just that they didn't have the opportunity to spread their wings like that. Yet,
yeah.
There are so many people that are talented, right? I mean, and they should be encouraged to do what makes them feel, you know. But as far as like I'm saying, I am not the example of this, because had I been able to tour and had I been able to, you can make a living if you aren't, you know, in my situation, I have a particular, but it's a tough life if you want to have a family and you still want to go on the road. It's like a movie star, you know, they have to go on location.
Yeah.
And a musician has to travel all over the world. And, you know, that is not necessarily conducive to a very stable life unless you're actually working with somebody that's in the same band, you know, in the same environment that you can be together. Many musicians have sacrificed their family life for, you know, the road or the other way. The best musicians I know, including my John Paul friend here, is a good example of that. He teaches at Berklee School of Music. I think that's very well, you know, I think he's done really well. But in his own mind, as far as his own, you know, level of success and touring and all that, he chose to have a family, you know, rather than go on the road and leave his family. So many musicians have to make these choices.
Right.
So, you know, I got a job. You know, I got an education and I got a job. And when I realized that I couldn't depend on music every week, you know, unless I was touring or going somewhere, if you want, it depends on your choices in life and your lifestyle and your age and what you're willing to tolerate and how much adventure you want in your life.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
So much,
thank
right?
You. Yeah, thank you for that. And so there's somebody wants to ask, will you be producing any new music in the upcoming future?
Absolutely. In fact, there's a new song, and I know this might, you know, I am multi-genre, okay, so nobody has to, you know, but I have a rock song that's come out, and I'm going to be doing a video for that with my band, which is young and old. It's like the combo. It's like we're going to go back to it. This is kind of like classic rock song. And it's completely not jazz, but it's fun. But I do have, like I said, I have so much music in my piano bench in every kind of genre, jazz and rock and Latin and everything. And it's like, you know, reggae. So my goal is to absolutely develop that. And I just secured, as much as one can, a commitment from a pianist in Connecticut, locally, who is going to start working. We are going to start working together in October on some of those, and we're going to create a completely different. We have no idea what we're going to create, but we're going to create.
Wow!
And that's the fun part of it. You know,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
we don't know how it's going to come out, but we're going to take the stuff in my piano bench and we're going to start playing around with it.
All right. Well, there's the answer for our listeners out there. I want to play another hit of yours. This one's called Have You Ever Loved? Can you tell us a little bit about the title of this song? I know it has a little story behind it.
Well, now you're getting a little personal, Brenda, here. You know what I mean?
Oh, I'm like, sorry. Well, we don't have to go there.
Well, let's just say, have you ever loved? Like, in a sense, what this is actually about is almost a karmic thing. It's almost like, you know, sometimes you're fooled. You know, is it real? Is it Memorex? You know, sometimes the attraction is so strong that you don't know if it really is sustainable or it's not sustainable. Or if it's real or if it's just something that you're feeling. You know, what your head, what your mind, and what your body don't always, like, integrate in the right way. You know, sometimes it's a little off balance. This is a passionate song. You know, this is a passionate song. And it is asking that question to someone who, let's just put it this way, like many people, have you ever loved? If you ask that question to somebody who has a serious fear of commitment, that's kind of what this song is about. You know, it's like, have you ever loved? You know, is someone who just, you know, are you, you know, it's asking a question because it's asking, you know, how deep does it go?
Yeah. Well, here it goes. Have you ever loved? Be right back.
Blown upon my wings, you were touching me, you were telling me, have you ever really loved?
Well, Joy, we almost come into an end to our showcase. If you want to give a shout out to any supporters that supported you on your musical journey, you go right ahead. And I have one more question for you. Go ahead, Joy.
Well, yes, I want to give a shout out to all the musicians and all of the people in my life and my family and so forth that have been there for me during this time of transition. And what is your question, Brenda?
My question is, what are your words of wisdom for those that are suffering out there in the world today? Or if you would like to pass a message to any of those upcoming in the music industry, if you have any advice to give them, what would be your message?
Ah, wow. Well, I would say to every child has that artist person in them. And the problem is, once we're adults, it's not an original thought, but the idea is that we can be saved from our suffering through the release of creative energy in whatever way that we do it. Our creativeness as human beings, everyone has abilities to create something. And to tap into whatever creativity that one has can be one's salvation in times of hardship, and in pain, and in suffering, and all of that. For me, having been really, suffering on my own level physically has brought me to different levels of truth that some of those truths have been difficult to learn and to accept, but they're all growth. It's all about your openness. We talked about listening, being open, being a channel to accept those things that come from the universe. You ask to, I also believe that when you ask, there's a metaphysics to all of this as well, that there is, ask and you shall receive. If you want to be a great musician, if you want to be a great artist, if you want to be a great doctor, if you want to be, whatever you want to do, ask and create, become that, become the person that you want to be. Everybody isn't born that way. We have to try to become better than who we are. And we do when we try.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your words of wisdom. And, Joy Mover, I would love for you to come back on my show when you have new music or any new projects. I'll be following you as a friend forever. So could you go ahead and give your website information again, please?
Absolutely. My website information is http://www.joymover.com/.
All right, everyone. You heard it from Joy Mover yourself. And this is Brenda Moss signing out with another one of Joy Mover's songs. This is called Till There Was You. And thank you, Joy Mover. You are a blessing. You are a songbird. You keep doing what you're doing. Love your music.
Love you, Brenda. Thank you so much.
There was-